Welcome to the Uncovered Podcast, where we take a deeper look into the ideas, companies, and entrepreneurs that are creating the future and uncover the stories you haven't heard. Uncovered is presented by PJC, an early stage venture capital firm committed to supporting the next generation of entrepreneurs.
We're back with season three of the Uncovered Podcast, where we're exploring the entrepreneurial side of VC. We're talking to founders of VC funds to discuss the parallels between starting a venture fund and starting a startup. I'm here with my co-host, Rob May.
Hi, everyone.
And today we have PJC's managing partner who is joining us, David Martiron. How are you doing today, David?
Great. How are you doing?
We're doing well. So, you know, why don't we kick it off with learning a little bit more about your background and how you began your career in venture capital?
Great. Sure. So it's kind of interesting because I left the world of investment banking in 98, 99, very similar to the market that we're having today in terms of where there's just so much activity going on and people are jumping around in the world of investment banking. And a lot of my friends who were at a Columbia Business School with me and doing banking decided to go work for startups. And I had an interesting opportunity to come to Rhode Island, actually, and work for a family office. And so I kind of bucked the trend versus a lot of my colleagues who were going from banking to startups at the time. And so I came to Rhode Island and worked for a family office called Rex Capital Ventures. And there we did SPVs before people even knew what SPVs were off of the balance sheet of the family office, and had quite a nice successful track record. And then that sort of launched into PJC.
That's awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like getting your first LP commitment? I think what's really interesting is, you know, founders go out and they raise capital. They need to find, you know, one lead investor. Can you tell us, you know, the differences between raising capital for a VC fund versus a startup, in your opinion?
Yeah, great question, Matt. So we were a little different because it was quite a while ago and we raised our fund. One of my co-founders, Gina Raimondo, used to say that we raised our first fund, which was a $20 million fund, $100,000 capital commitment at a time. And so we went around back then and it was really hard to get investments for a first-time fund. You don't have a lot of the structure and infrastructure today that's set up for, you know, institutions that are investing in first-time funds and things like that. So it was very much, you know, $100,000, $250,000 investments. And we sort of clawed our way to a $20 million fund, which was very difficult. The real difference is when you're raising a fund versus, you know, raising money as an operator, I mean, you really need your lead. And so I think as a operator of starting a company, when you get your lead, there's always a lot of followers that come in behind you. Where with a VC fund, you've got to go get a lot of leads. I would sort of equate it to when you're sort of putting together a round with safes. It's very similar to that, where you're just kind of hobbling people together and you've got to have a catalyst to sort of get people over the finish line to sort of fund, where when you get a lead, when you're raising for your company, it's a lot easier to sort of get that process going.
That makes a lot of sense. Can you tell us a little bit about your first, you know, major institutional commitment, whether it came from, you know, a fund one or fund two? We'd love to just learn a little bit about what that was like to kind of get that win.
Yeah, no, great question. And our first one was more of a local fund. And then our second fund, which is probably a better example, we had a very large hedge fund come in and be our lead investor. And, you know, they came in and basically funded half the fund. It was about an $80 million fund. And the idea was that, you know, the hedge fund would do the IPO, and they had a growth fund at the time, and this was around 2007 timeframe, and then we would be the early stage VC fund. So it was super exciting times. It was a great hedge fund that kind of came in. It's exciting to fund us, and then unfortunately, in 2008, that we had the crash, and they were sort of hit some problems and issues around that side of the business in terms of their hedge fund, and so what went from a great opportunity to having a hedge fund come in and really be our lead investor, it sort of turned into a problem, you know, post the crash in 08, because they really sort of couldn't continue to fund us. So we had to go out and start a whole new LP base for our third fund.
What's really interesting about that, David, is now what we're seeing is we're seeing hedge funds in the venture business. And it seems like that particular hedge fund was well before their time, you know, recognizing the opportunity that venture provides as, you know, these companies grow and then, you know, inevitably go public.
Yeah. And I think part of that, Matt, is, you know, what you're seeing with the unicorns, right? So 8 years ago, there was 12 unicorns and today there's, you know, 750 unicorns. And so I think what the hedge funds have figured out is that, you know, there's a lot of activity and opportunity in the private markets. So they're coming in and they're funding private companies, they're funding, you know, early stage venture funds. And so they really want to get in early. And now with the IPO market opening up where you can take a company public a lot smaller, a lot earlier, it's really great opportunities for early stage VC funds to get in and be able to get liquidity. So when I got in this business, you know, most of our exits were through strategics. Now you're really starting to see the IPO market open up. We've seen it for the last year or two. We're seeing SPACs, you know, open up as well. And so I think it's a great opportunity to be getting companies public. I think it's time that we have the ability to have smaller companies be public.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, as we shift gears here, you know, some of the parallels you see between, you know, managing and running a venture fund and, you know, managing and running a startup as a CEO? I would love to just, you've sat on a lot of boards for a long time and you've also run a fund in parallel. You obviously report to LPs and would love to just learn a little bit about how you think about kind of the differences and the similarities.
Yeah, it's a great question. I've always thought of myself as an entrepreneur, you know, starting a venture fund. And I think when people ask me today, you know, how do you start a venture fund? How do you get into venture? I would say it's very similar to yours and Rob's background, which is being an entrepreneur. You know, the path that I took to becoming on the venture side was really through a family office. And I don't think you see that as much today, or it's not as popular today, versus, you know, really having the experience. So I've always viewed, you know, my sort of role in starting PJC or Point Truth Capital at the time, which is now PJC, as growing a business. And it's really, you know, developing new LPs, which are really my customers or our customers, and very similar to a company's trying to grow their business. So we think about it as, you know, you have to sort of develop the LPs, get them on board, build relationships. Very similar to the way, you know, you're going to, you know, get customers and revenues for your business. In terms of our you know, customers, in terms of the portfolio companies, you know, we work really closely with them, just like a company is trying to recruit employees to work for them. And you want to recruit the A team to be part of your senior management team. I think about it as we're trying to recruit CEOs and back entrepreneurs who are the A team and really can grow their business. And we're part of that. We think that's really, really important and harvesting that. And we think we really have a very good focus founder, first time founders. You know, we believe that, you know, getting first time founders board and backing them has really been successful for PJC. And so I think you're taking a chance. I think as an operator of a business, you know, you're bringing on young people to help you grow your business. You know, that is the area to have success. I think a lot of times entrepreneurs, what they realize is when they start a company, you know, they get to a point where they start to, you know, it's 10, 15 people, and then they add a whole team of who is a VP of engineering, a VP of sales, and they start to build out their team. I think, you know, with PJC and myself, it's the same way with our portfolio companies and bringing on partners and venture partners as well. So I view it as very, very similar. I feel like as a venture capitalist, you know, for over the last 20 years, we've had to pivot the business, what I would say, just like a corporation, when you're starting a startup, you've got to pivot it sometimes and find that product market fit. And I think venture is such a dynamic area that, you know, you're always changing it over, you know, 4, 5, or 6 years. So it's been really exciting to be a part of that and really see the ecosystem develop. And I'd say right now, for the first 10 years of my career, I mean, it was all about private equity and that was a darling. And I think venture is finally starting to see its light and it's really nice to be a part of having the opportunity of seeing, you know, the venture capital class in general really perform with the entrepreneur. So I think it's been a really dynamic time over the last 10 years for sure.
So David, I'm curious, you know, everybody talks about the J curve in venture, and for people that sort of know what that is, how did you raise funds 2 and funds 3, given that you were probably in the middle of that J curve for fund 1?
You know, it's interesting. It's a great question, Rob. I think the way you need to think about the J curve is, you know, typically people will tell you or historically that, you know, fund three is the hardest one to raise. You know, fund one, people will come in and say, hey, you're a first time fund. We'll give you a shot. You know, got an impressive track record. You know, you tell a good story. And so we'll give you some capital. And then, you know, you raise that fund, it takes 2 or 3 years to invest it. And then you raise fund two, go back to the same investors. They're excited. You've got some upticks. You don't really have any exits yet, but it looks good, feels good. You know, you go out and add maybe a few new investors. So you raise a bigger fund for fund two and kind of go from there. And then fund three really becomes, okay, you know, as you go back, investors will look and say, how did you do for me, right? They give you the first fund, the second fund. And by the third time, you have to really have performance. By then, it's, you know, 6, 7, 8 years down the road. You've hopefully had some exits and they can really sort of say, hey, you know, it's done really, really well and we're going to continue to fund you. So I think, you know, over the years, having been in this business for quite a while, a lot of funds have started. And I think when you can raise one and two, if you can get to 3, 4, 5, I think you can sustain and continue to grow. And I think if you look at a lot of the premier funds, they're on fund 8, 9, 10, 12, whatever, because they've had success over the years. And I think a lot of first time funds will fizzle out after fund one and two, and you just won't see them continue to grow future funds. And so it's a really tough business, because I think when you look at as an example, $100 million fund to drive $300 million in returns, you know, you've got to have massive exits with big ownerships to drive those kind of numbers. And so I think people look at venture as, oh, it's you know, my kids like to say, it's Shark Tank. You sit there and people come and pitch you ideas and tell you how easy it is. It's a really hard business. It's a great fun business to be involved with, but I don't think a lot of people realize how hard it is to sustain and continue to grow a fund over the years and to get into fund 4, 5, and 6.
And how do you think about, like, when you know, venture is an area where you mentioned earlier, it changes a lot, it changes quick. Like, what are some of the key trends and things that are going on right now that are going to, you know, require, you know, venture capitalists to continue to, like, adapt and grow and change?
Yeah, I think a lot of times, the industries are always changing, right? So like right now there's, as you know, Rob, in your background, like there's a lot of AI opportunities going on. I think it's the new trend of stuff. You know, we've seen some new trends with, you know, Bitcoin, for example. You know, we took an early shot in 2017 on a company called BlockFi. And we liked it because it was an old line banking business of lending that was really using the cryptocurrency or Bitcoin as a platform. And so, you know, I think the exciting stuff is it's constantly changing. People are talking about robotics, right? I think another big area right now that we like is just the world is mobility. How is it changing in terms of how people are doing business? I think we've had the biggest change with COVID. I think COVID's really changed the way people work, the way people are going to work in the future. And the more that COVID continues to drag on now with the Delta variant, I think we'll continue to see new trends and new opportunities across the board. I think a lot of our portfolio companies are wrestling with how do you continue to create, you know, firm culture, company culture, keep people engaged in this kind of environment, because everyone assumed that we'd be back to work in September. And here we are September 1st today. And unfortunately, we're not. And I think it's still TBD. And now people are talking about January and maybe next summer. And so we're continuing to stay in this environment, and we'll continue to see new business models, new opportunities constantly sort of pop up. So it's a pretty dynamic time. And I think there's a lot of new trends coming in how you can do business over, you know, Zoom and things like that. And we're seeing some interesting opportunities to invest there as well.
David, one trend that we're seeing, which is a kind of systematic change from, you know, your classic partnership model of venture capital, is kind of the rise of solo capitalists that are going out there by themselves. They're raising funds and they're making decisions quickly for entrepreneurs without, you know, without the need to consult with a partnership. How do you see that playing out over a long period of time? And what are some of the benefits you've seen over the years of having a partnership versus, you know, the flexibility that some of these solo capitalists will have to make decisions, you know, extremely quickly without having to consult other partners or, you know, convince other colleagues that the opportunity they're evaluating is interesting?
Great question. I think there's a couple different dynamics as part of this, Matt. I would say the solo venture capitalist is very similar to what we do here at PJC on the venture partner side. So I think the model of entrepreneurs who are running businesses, seeing interesting opportunities and being able to invest in them through a fund like a PJC has been around forever. I think this is just a new take on it, right? It's allowing venture partners or allowing solo, you know, VCs to invest quickly and put money put capital to work with not being so actively involved. I think it works fine on the early stage stuff because candidly, the early stage stuff, what we're seeing now versus what we used to see is, hey, look, you don't have boards, right? Boards don't come up in seed rounds and pre-seed rounds. And sometimes they don't even come up in A rounds. And so you don't need to be as actively involved, you know, at that level when you're raising these sort of, or these individual LPs or individual sole, you know, GPs are doing deals. It's not like it used to be, you have to be on comp committees and things like that. So I think it actually works. And I think we'll continue to see more of it. I think it's a trend that here at PJC we're exploring, and we've been doing it for a while with one of our partners, Zat Shai, who's been running NextAmp for years. And he's been doing two or three deals a year out of PJC. So it's a model that I think has been around for a while. I don't think it's new, but I think it's one that has been exacerbated a little bit more by people actually raising capital and putting it to work. So I think in a market like this where, you know, the tide raises all boats, you know, everything's up and to the right, I think it works really, really well. I think where you get into trouble is as the market starts to turn and you really have, you know, some real issues in the market, interest rates going up or whatever. I think at that point, then the question becomes, how does it really play out, right? And is the model, hey, you know, we did a bunch of investments as a solo GP, it didn't work, I call it a day and I walk away, right? And so this goes back to my earlier question and comments, which is like, if you're trying to build a firm long term, I think it's really about having a partnership and being able to have a team together to build. I think if you're just trying to get rich quick and flip it quickly, sure, you can be a solo GP and take wild bets. And if it works, you can build out your team and go longer and raise a bigger fund, or you can just stay the way it is. If it doesn't work, you kind of go back if you want to be an entrepreneur and doing things like that. You know, it was one that, you know, a guy that I was on the board of a long time ago named Keith Raboy that most people know, and that was his model shit when I was on a board with him 10 years ago, 12 years ago. He was working in the company and doing investing, you know, like a solo GP himself. And then eventually he got into the venture space. But, you know, that model has been around for a long time. And I think it's an interesting model. And I think there's opportunities out there for it for sure.
David, what are some of the things? I mean, I think people think venture is a pretty sexy business. You know, you get to look at companies that are building the future and, you know, do all this kind of stuff. But like, you know, what are some of the things that surprised you when you sort of got into venture, like some of the things that you have to do on the like reporting side and back office side? And like, what are some of the things that maybe you didn't expect that people wouldn't think you'd have to spend a lot of time on to build a venture fund?
Yeah, I think the thing that surprised me the most about, you know, being involved in the venture side is really about being an asset allocator. You know, everyone talks about the sexy part of, you know, Shark Tank and people are pitching you and you get to pick the deals you want. And it's kind of sexy and exciting. And it is. And I was just having this conversation with Kathleen in our office the other day. You know, she came over and she's really been enjoying being on the VC side and looking at deals and looking at new technologies and you know, what's kind of the new trends and stuff, which is really exciting. I think that the tricky part that people don't realize is at the end of the day, you're an asset allocator. And so your LPs are providing you money to be good stewards of their capital, and you're providing it to the entrepreneurs. And you need to make sure that you're putting your capital into the right deals, right? Because you can, every deal is different, and you can have a lot of money in a deal that goes bad or a very little bit amount of money in one of your best deals. And so, you know, you're really an asset manager of saying, okay, you have $100 million of capital, and how do you generate that into $300 million? And thinking through which deals you put how much money into. So I think there's a lot around understanding the financial side of the business. And so I think, you know, and I've had LPs tell me this a lot in the past, and when you talk to them, which is the VC firms that do the best are the ones that have people who have entrepreneurial backgrounds and finance backgrounds. And because both groups kind of come together and they balance out, and that really gets the best results is what I've heard from LPs in the past.
That's awesome, David. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the companies you've been involved with and in terms of success you've had? I know you've had a lot of success at the beginning of your career and you've continued that throughout. Would be great to just, you know, talk to the audience here about some of the companies you've had a chance to see grow and, you know, what you think makes a great entrepreneur.
Yeah, great question. So I'll talk about a couple of deals. We backed a guy named Ben Bixby out of Georgetown. He and another individual who had just lots of success through his career. Whatever he did, he did it really well and was top of what he did. And so we backed him at a company called MyEnergy, which was quickly acquired by Nest Labs. He stayed at Nest Labs and for 4 years was a very successful exit for us. And then we've just backed him again, recently in his new endeavor. And so I think it's another one that was a really nice, you know, $3 billion exit for us. And then, you know, the theme of the other two entrepreneurs, we backed David Barrett, who was a first-time CEO. And he, too, had success in his past. And he's actually looking to go public next month. So we're pretty excited about that one. And we've been involved with him for the last 7 years. So I would say that the takeaway and the thing proven out success for PJC is really, you know, backing first-time entrepreneurs who've been successful in their prior jobs, going after really big market opportunities, and that's kind of worked for us. So it's been a nice run, and we've had a lot of opportunity to work with these groups and these people, and it takes a long time to build a big company, and we're patient capital, and so that's how we sort of view the world.
Thanks so much, David. We really appreciate your time. For the listeners, if you'd like to, you know, learn more about the Uncovered Podcast, you can go to pjc.vc/podcast. We're always looking for interesting ideas and recommendations, so feel free to reach us there. And David, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Uncovered Podcast. To learn more about PJC and the Uncovered Podcast, visit us at www.pjc.vc.